Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. On today's show, it looks like Jimmy Butler will be playing for the Timberwolves after all on opening night, but how much longer will he be in Minnesota?
And the NBA season finally tips off tonight, including a potential Eastern Conference Finals showdown between the Celtics and the Sixers. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for Fansided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Rommel, a credentialed NBA writer who covers the league at large for Fansided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRommel13.
It's a big day in the NBA. Regular season basketball is back. Tonight, we've got two primetime games on TNT. First, we've got the Celtics and the Sixers, and then you'll be able to watch the Warriors and Thunder after that. But hey, it wouldn't be an NBA podcast if we didn't start off by talking about Jimmy Butler, who reportedly will play for the Timberwolves when their season starts on Wednesday. This is the best drama on TV, David. It has everything from Butler calling out nearly everyone in the front office to Andrew Wiggins, poor Andrew Wiggins, doing his best to get Big Brother Butler to like him. And according to The Athletic's John Krasinski, team owner Glenn Taylor has vowed to find a trade for Butler, all while he keeps playing while he's still employed by the Timberwolves.
Unbelievable.
So let's play a game of over-under, David. How many games does Jimmy Butler play for Minnesota? I'm setting the over-under at 10 games.
I'm going over on that one. I don't think they're going to find a trade for him as easily as they did. Like, they had a deal already in the works. Reports vary whether or not Miami balked at their offer or changed it somehow or weren't willing to include a bigger name player, say Josh Richardson, in the deal. We've also heard that, you know, Taylor may have balked at the offer that Miami may have made. And, of course, there's always the positioning for leverage, trying to see if another suitor, potentially the Clippers or the Houston Rockets, might step up and increase their offer for a Butler player type player. But at this time, I just don't know that any team is going to be interested in dealing with a team that's as outwardly as dysfunctional as Minnesota is. I don't know that they're going to be able to find a trade, and I don't know that a trade is going to be made until later on the season when a would-be contender suddenly goes, you know what, we could be a Butler away from going and advancing past X, whether it's in the Eastern Conference or in the Western Conference. That remains to be seen. But when somebody becomes a little bit more desperate, that and only then will we see Minnesota have to make a trade, because that's when somebody will be more willing to increase whatever offer are currently on the table.
Right. I mean, they could find a trade. It's just they've got to lower their price. That's the big thing here. And I think at some point they're going to come to the realization that they've got to trade him, because, you know, you've got Karl Anthony Towns sitting there. He's not happy with the situation, I can't imagine. The dysfunction, you know, however many games you can win with Jimmy Butler, and we'll talk about that next, but it's not worth just increasing the dysfunction and continuing this dysfunction. I've got it set at under 10 games as well. I've got an unofficial deadline of October 31st, Halloween, right before the Timberwolves go on a 5-game West Coast road trip in Portland and basically all the California teams. I think that they're going to try to get a deal done right before then. They play the Utah Jazz on the 31st. They play the Lakers right before they play the Jazz. I think, you know, maybe you compete with the LeBron's Lakers and Donovan Mitchell's Jazz in a game that could have some playoff implications if you're Minnesota, I guess, if you're like kind of pie in the sky thinking. But I think that they don't want to go on that road trip with Jimmy Butler on the plane. I think that they want to try to get something done by Halloween. So I'm going to go with the under as well.
No, I went with the over, though. I went with the over.
Oh, you went with the over.
Sorry. No, I think I don't think a deal is going to get done until closer to the trade deadline, to be honest with you.
Wow.
Yeah, I think as professionals, they can all accept the chemistry issues or lack of chemistry. I think for Karl Anthony Towns in particular, he kind of needs to prove that he can handle it. If he's going to be the de facto leader of this team one way or the other, whether while Butler's on the roster or once Butler's taken or jettisoned somewhere else, he's going to have to show that he can handle it, that he's not afraid of the adversity or the challenge that Butler presents. So you're going to have to put on a brave face. If we understand reports correctly, they've been upset with each other for all of Butler's tenure, which was, you know, all of one season. So I don't know that they've ever had the kind of chemistry that we'd like them to have, and they still won 40-something games and, you know, advanced into the playoffs. So I think they can push forward. I think they can continue to do so. Look, we've seen them struggle in the preseason, but I think they can continue to find some way of playing with each other, if not necessarily enjoying it.
Well, let's talk about how many games they're going to win if they're forced to play each other. Over under, how many games do the Timberwolves win this season? Vegas has it set at 41, so let's go with that.
I'll go under on that one. While they still have to, they'll find a way to play with each other, those kind of chemistry issues will crop up at some point. And once he's traded, and I think he will be traded, then you're going to have to kind of adjust on the fly with a new player or new players. You're going to change things again considerably. And who knows what they'll get back in a return package for Jimmy Butler. And so they're going to have to find some way of incorporating those new players. You always see some kind of a drop-off after a player. And if we believe reports correctly, it's not like they're going to exchange a superstar for Jimmy Butler. They're going to get a role player, somebody who can come in and contribute. So there's going to be some adjustment period for that new player, whoever he may be. So I'm going to go with under 41 wins.
I just think there's so much hanging over this team right now as far as baggage and just chemistry concerns.
Right.
And I think it's a real thing, and I think that that amount of dysfunction does translate to the court. I think you can have teams that win even despite maybe not getting along
Cleveland
off the court. Year. But Cleveland last year, absolutely. But, you know, Jimmy Butler is not LeBron James.
He's not.
And I don't know that the Timberwolves, even without Butler, are good enough to win. Look, they were 37-21 with Butler last season. Jimmy Butler was substantially elevated that team. If they trade him sooner rather than later, look, they were 10-14 without Butler. That's a 34-win pace. And that was just with Jimmy Butler being hurt, not Jimmy Butler not being on the team or Jimmy Butler causing as many concerns as he's causing right now in that locker room. So I'm going way under on that 41. And let's say they do trade Jimmy Butler within the next week. I'm still not sold on the Timberwolves. Look, Karl Anthony Towns, really, really good player. I have yet to see Tom Thibodeau run an effective offense through a center. He typically runs his offense through perimeter guys, through a slowed down kind of, you know, work your way to the paint and kick out type offense. I just don't see Thibs running an effective offense through Karl Anthony Towns, which is a whole other thing that we could talk about.
Sure.
Andrew Wiggins.
You're not a big fan.
Hasn't nobody's a big fan except for the Timberwolves apparently after signing him to that huge contract. I mean, he's when Butler's on the court, he's looking over his shoulder hoping for Jimmy Butler's approval, and he's when Jimmy Butler's off the court, Andrew Wiggins isn't good enough to run your offense through either. Jeff Teague, I can take him and leave him. I just don't see a real high ceiling on this team with or without Butler, so I'm going way under on 41.
Yeah, and it's not like the rest of the NBA is going to take it easy on them. There are 29 other sharks out there circling, and there's plenty of blood in the water, in the Minnesotan waters. What is it, the waters of Lake Minnetonka? You know, so I think they'll be able to capitalize on whatever weaknesses they'll see. They'll look for any kind of chinks in the armor, and they'll take advantage of them. So you're going to get 29 other teams are going to press their advantage and try and exploit whatever chemistry issues they might have. So you're absolutely right. I think it's going to be a problem for Minnesota for the rest of the season. As long as Butler's there, and even if Butler's gone, I think it'll still be a problem.
Exactly.
This year's a wash for them.
Yeah. Yep. And it doesn't help being in the Western Conference either.
No, not at all.
The Jimmy Butler situation is one of the craziest we've had this offseason, but tonight it will officially be the regular season. We've got Hoops That Matter tonight, and we'll break down those games next. But first, let's tell you about what's going on the NFL side of the network. Locked On NFL is becoming a favorite daily NFL podcast. On Mondays, we have the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. On Tuesdays, former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfels joins host Matt Williamson, who will have some of the best voices in football on throughout the week before making his picks on Fridays. So if you're looking for daily NFL content, subscribe to Locked On NFL on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen. And guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue, BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready whenever the right opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than at the pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, and faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. A bunch of transactions happened on the last day before the regular season began, and we'll talk about them later on, but let's look ahead to tonight's games, David. First, we've got the Sixers at the Celtics. What are you watching for in that matchup?
Well, I think from the Sixers side of it, obviously you want to see how Markel Fultz is being incorporated. We've seen signs of him starting and recovering from that injury that kept him out for most of last season. We think the shooting woes are mostly behind him. But it's one thing to incorporate and experiment over the course of the preseason, another one when the lights are brightest and when you're facing possibly your biggest rival in the Eastern Conference. And from Boston, I want to see Gordon Hayward. I know he struggled. The shot isn't falling. The explosiveness isn't there. Not that he was overly explosive to begin before his injury, but he's certainly, you know, just trying to find his timing out on the floor. So that's been an issue. I want to see how Boston is able to kind of incorporate their depth. It's one of their greatest strengths. You want to be able to see the team and see how that rotation plays out for Brad Stevens. There's a lot there, and I wonder whether or not there's going to be a hint of animosity between these two teams, because I think with LeBron in the Western Conference now, all of a sudden you're starting to realize that it's pretty wide open in the East. And I think between these two teams, and you can include Toronto in there as well, they see themselves as very likely or very potential having the Eastern Conference thrown. So I think that's going to be a really tense, not necessarily a playoff-like atmosphere. I know that it gets tossed around a little bit too much, but it should be a lot more intense than your typical game in early October.
Well, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I want to see how they come out and get there because, you know, these two teams have been propped up as the next big thing, not only in the Eastern Conference, but in the NBA, right? I mean, They are kind of – they're kind of trying to – stand on the same corner, you know, and I want to see how they come out. Are they going to be really aggressive and have that animosity that you talked about? Are they going to just say, hey, no, this is my corner, get off of it, or, you know, no, we're number one in the East, let's go out and show them? Or are they going to come out and maybe feel each other out a little bit, understanding that, hey, we could be seeing each other in the Eastern Conference Finals potentially, we don't want to give up the whole playbook on the first night. Do they approach this and just sort of feel each other out a little bit, kind of go back to basics, try to see, you know, what the other team's strategy is against them?
Right.
And then the other thing I'm looking for is which individual player sort of establishes himself as the alpha dog on the court, right? Who is the best player among the Sixers and Celtics? You can pull a bunch of different people and get a bunch of different questions from Embiid, Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving.
Marcus Smart.
Marcus Smart, of course, Terry Rozier. I think a lot of people are still on the Jason Tatum bandwagon. Not bandwagon, I shouldn't say. But, I mean, there are people who think, even like, you know, Brian Windhorst on ESPN saying that he would take Jason Tatum over Ben Simmons. I mean, there are, you know, smart people who believe that. I mean, there's a lot of...
Yeah, I read a report that's saying that they expect him to become a top 15 player in the NBA this season. That seems like a hell of a leap. I'm not sure that that's a possibility given how deep that roster is and how he's going to be competing for minutes the way he is. So, I mean, he'll be efficient in whatever time he's out there, but he's a shooter. He's going to have off nights too. And I think we saw a great performance from him last year. I wonder how he'll respond.
Top 15 is pushing it, but I think he could definitely be an all-star in the East. I have no question that him and Ben Simmons probably make the all-star team this year. It's going to be a good game. It's going to be really interesting, and hopefully it's not no repeats of what happened in the Celtics' first game of last season either.
Absolutely.
But the other game we have, that's the first game on TNT, the late game, West Coast game, Thunder at Warriors. The Durant and Westbrook quote-unquote beef, kind of old, right? I mean, that's I don't know if that's what the NBA was going for by scheduling these two teams. They are two playoff teams. It is the Warriors. People love to watch the Warriors. That said, the Durant-Westbrook thing being old, that said, I'm so here for any interaction that those two have on the court. Am I crazy? I'm so in on any Durant-Westbrook. I'm still watching the body language.
No, I don't think you're crazy. I just think it's overblown at this point. I don't know that they're really going to interact all that much. I think it's mostly about getting Paul George back and seeing how that Thunder team responds. You know, they've moved on from Melo, but they're also missing Andre Roberson. So I don't know that this will be much of a challenge. I think this is going to be, like most games against the Warriors, it's going to be a blowout early on. So it's not going to be nearly as entertaining as a lot of people are expected to be.
Steven Adams is going to take a lot. He's going to take advantage of the Golden State's young centers in the middle there. I mean, Golden State obviously still without DeMarcus Cousins. I think Steven Adams can have a field day against Damon Jones and Jordan Bell and those guys.
That's absolutely something to look out for here. He could finish with a 20-15 night very easily there.
Can I go back to the Paul George thing?
Yeah, go for it.
I really want to see if he steps up because
he's not. He's not. He's not going to step up. That's not who he is.
Okay. He quietly got a lot better last season, I thought. Like, he became a much more efficient scorer, a lot less of those mid-range shots, got a lot better finishing around the rim. Obviously, the three-point shooting was there. It always has been.
But this is still Westbrook's team, and I think that's the whole thing, though. I think Paul George is a great player. I think there's also an understanding, kind of, if you want to look at it that way, without the animosity, kind of the same kind of chemistry problems that there might be in Minnesota between Towns and Butler, where Butler is a clear alpha dog, and I hate using that terminology, but that's the reality. That kind of mentality where everybody else is subservient to him and kind of has to play off of him, I think that's the reality in Oklahoma City as well. You've got Westbrook.
But don't you think Paul George could play better off of Westbrook without Carmelo Anthony being there? Like, Westbrook was trying in a way to get guys like Melo and Paul George involved in that first year. And now without Melo there, I feel like Paul George could be an even better second banana. You know, I feel like he could be a better second option, even if he's still the second option. I think Paul George functions really well as a second option.
Yeah,
but I think he could be an elevated version of himself. Look, Westbrook is going to be Westbrook. We know what we're getting with Russell Westbrook, right?
Yeah.
But I think the Thunder's ceiling, if we're trying to find what their barometer is, I think it raises with Paul George because I think he could be better even in that role than he was last season.
Yeah, it's possible. But still, without Roberson, I think you're just going to have too many problems defensively. That's never been a strong suit of the team. Well, I mean, it is a strong suit of the team when Roberson's in there. And obviously with Paul George, that's a very strong perimeter defense. But it's just, you know, the Warriors are the Warriors, and they're going to be as good as they have ever been, and if not better. So, I mean, with their
Roberson's expected to be out until at least December, according to the latest reports. That's a tough loss for them.
Absolutely.
On the Warriors side of things, I don't know what I'm watching for there. The same stuff as always, just how many points are they going to score?
Well, you know, it's game one. You covered the team. You've been around them a lot. And when I got a chance to talk to Steve Kerr, you know, one of the recurring themes that I saw throughout the course of the season was, you know, that their biggest issue was internal. But you said that they were a little bit more relaxed at media day. You feel like they're going to be a little bit more joyful heading into the season. Do I remember that correctly?
That is the idea. That's been the message. It's been like it's kind of been the systematic mission statement throughout the organization. I think it's going to work to a point.
Right.
It's definitely going to work better than last year, especially when you consider last year's team was very much the opposite. The message throughout the organization was work hard. Repeating championships is really hard. Don't take this for granted. And so that was the message. I think that started to wear on the team a little bit. I just don't think that they were built to kind of do that in the regular season. Because this team can coast and be just fine.
Right.
Like, this team can coast and still be the best team in the league. They'll be fine. And I think they're starting to just understand that, you know, in a very realistic sense, not in a cocky sense. But it will be interesting to see how that rotation shakes out. Again, the center thing is a real thing. Nick Young's not there anymore. They've got guys that they really like Jonas Direkpo there at the stretch four. So it'll be interesting to see what their rotation shakes out as, especially with those bench guys. But Let's move on. There were a bunch of players up for extensions this week, and a bunch of teams made a bunch of decisions. Ooh. We'll look at those next, including some big money getting paid to Miles Turner and Larry Nance Jr. next. But first, we've created the ultimate NBA Twitter feed. It's at LockedOnNBAnet. It has all of the Locked On local experts on one feed. Every NBA team is covered, every local angle uncovered. It is the ultimate Twitter follow for the NBA fan. Local experts on every team on one Twitter feed. How can you beat that? Follow Locked On NBA Net for the ultimate NBA Twitter experience. We've got a bunch of extensions and not extensions that we want to talk about. Let's start in Indiana, where the Pacers signed their big man, Miles Turner, to a four-year deal that could be worth up to $80 million, David. And it's going to be a cap hit of $18 million a year. Is that a good deal?
I think it's a good deal. I think I like Turner's potential. I think that he had an off year trying to adjust to new players. You know, there was an expectation there that at first he was going to be playing off of Paul George. And of course, he was traded right before the season. And then Oladipo had his breakout year. And then you can't discount the fact that Domantas Sabonis had the kind of impressive showing that he did with Indiana. Mm-hmm. He understood the system. He was very efficient there. And Turner's role was somewhat reduced. And then he had to fight through injuries, etc. But I think we've heard reports that he's in much better shape. He's lost weight. He's gotten a little bit leaner. He's more prepared, I think, to be a dual threat inside and out, particularly out. I think that perimeter shot of his is a very deadly weapon at the center position. And I think that he can, he's still so young, you know, and I think he's really, you're kind of paying for what he will be, if not what he's been so far. So I like the deal. I'm still high on Turner's potential, even if he hasn't quite lived up to it so far.
Yeah, we tend with young players like Miles Turner to be like a season too early to project the breakout season, you know? Right. Like we all talk about it and then it doesn't happen and then we forget about that player and then right. It happens.
Right.
And I feel like Miles Turner's right. He's like the perfect test case for that, right? I'm with you. I think that there was a lot of confusion last year about what his role on the team would be, especially after that Paul George trade. There were so many articles written. Do you remember that? Like going into the season, this is Miles Turner's team now. It's going to be built through him, that outside-in offense with Miles Turner facilitating from in perimeter. And then Victor Oladipo became the most improved player in the NBA and just took the belt from Miles Turner right away. And Victor Oladipo is a really good NBA player. And now I think Miles Turner going into this season does have a better understanding of what his role is going to be on the team to be the complementary piece next to Victor Oladipo, but at a high level complementary piece. His game works really, really well with Oladipo. Oladipo could stretch the floor a little bit. He's a good 3-point shooter last year, and I think that's going to be repeatable, but he's really great at driving and kicking, getting to the rim and being physical. I think Turner's game really complements that well.
Yeah.
And I think if you're talking about the Pacers in general, their ceiling is going to be with Miles Turner, because I think Oladipo is going to continue to get better, but he's not going to obviously have the leap that he had last year. Turner is really the guy who can make that leap this year. I like the deal. I'm fine with it. He's not a dinosaur big man. He is a guy with a modern skill set, and that's what you pay for.
Agreed.
The Cavs extended Larry Nance Jr., who they acquired from the Lakers at last season's trade deadline, 4 years, $45 million. David, is this a good deal?
No, I don't see it. I mean, if you're talking about Turner and his skill set being part of the evolution of the NBA, Nance is the exact opposite. He's got great energy. He's got great hops. That's fine. He's undersized. He doesn't do anything particularly well defensively, and offensively, he's even worse. So I'm just not sure what you're paying for here. You're already somewhat undersized with Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love in your front court. Larry Nance is coming off the bench. I just don't see what role he plays. Defensively, he can do enough with his energy and with his athleticism. But offensively, I mean, he's got no kind of shot whatsoever. He doesn't create a shot for himself. He's basically a putback king at this point, and I don't know that that's going to change unless he's taken some huge leap over the course of the offseason that we're not familiar with, and I didn't see it in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Then I don't know what they're paying for, so I'd have to say it's not just a bad deal. It's a very bad deal.
I don't love this, and it feels to me as your classic LeBron James left, let's pay guys to keep as many guys here as possible kind of. You know,
continuity.
Like, it feels so much like that. And like, I get it. The Cavs don't have a ton of assets. They don't have a ton of young players, but Larry Nance is not young. I mean, he's not a young guy. And
it's a feel-good story, though, because his dad played there, so I wonder if that's what you're paying for as well.
Yeah, that's an expensive story. I could write you a story, Cavaliers. I won't charge $11 million a year. Look, I hate this deal. I'm right there with you. There's a lot of Cavs Twitter on there right now. Oh, you know, it kind of makes sense. I think they're talking themselves into it. I think you're paying a lot of money for an energy guy. I didn't like what I saw from him last season with the Cavs. Now I get it. Like, you're joining a LeBron James Cavaliers team with title hopes, and there were reports that, you know, he didn't get comfortable until he never got comfortable that entire season, even into the playoffs or in the NBA Finals, and they basically walked away from him. But I don't love his skill set for this team. You've got your energy guy in Tristan Thompson. You've got your floor spacer in Kevin Love. Larry Nance is he's not the rebounder that Thompson is. He's not a good shooter from the perimeter. I don't know where he fits in as more than just an energy guy, and I think you can find a guy who can just come in with a high motor for a lot cheaper than an $11 million. Let's look in Boston, where Terry Rozier turned down an extension reportedly worth about $12 million a year and will instead enter restricted free agency next summer. Should Rozier have taken that deal?
Hell yes. He can't afford to give up that kind of opportunity. And I don't know that he's going to be able to live up to whatever expectations. I know there are players around the league feel comfortable betting on themselves. Those bets often come up short. I just don't think that Rozier is expecting to have some kind of huge leap, or is he expecting that Kyrie Irving is going to miss time due to injury? But you've got other players on that roster that are going to take shine away from what Rozier can and can't do. And there are still weaknesses in Rozier's game. He's not a good finisher at the rim. I wouldn't count on his perimeter shooting, even though he had a nice showing in the playoffs last year. There's just too many questions about Rozier, the player, and I don't know that he's going to get any kind of opportunity to answer those questions over the course of the regular season. And so he's expecting to enter free agency next summer and you know, cash in. And I just don't see how that's likely to happen. Like, I know there are teams, the Phoenix Suns, I'm looking at you, who or Orlando Magic, who could use a point guard. I just don't know that they want to pay over $12 million a year for a player like Rozier.
I actually don't mind it. I think that he's $12 million a year going into next season. There's going to be another small cap spike up to $109 million projected right now. I don't think that he's going to lose any money from doing this. You're in Brad Stevens' system still, which makes point guards look really good. There's concerns about Rozier's game that I have.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know that that's shared with the rest of the league.
Well,
I think there are teams that are really high on Rozier.
Already, yeah.
Right, yeah, in Boston, of course, but I don't hate the deal for them. But if he wants to be in Boston, it's tough because they're going to be up over the cap next year. It's going to be really hard. It's going to be really, really hard for them to keep him unless they want to pay the luxury tax or unless they make another move on that roster. But I get it. Look, Marcus Smart signed a deal worth about $13 million a year on average. Rozier probably looks at Marcus Smart and he's like, "That dude can't shoot. Why are you only giving me 12?" And so. I don't mind it. I think that he can go into restricted free agency and make at least $12 million next year. The biggest risk here is that Boston tries to get something for Rozier before he leaves, which that's a really good bet to bet on if you know Danny Ainge and his track record. And they might try to move him before the trade deadline rather than just let him walk for nothing. I could see that happening.
Interesting.
In other news, Jamal Crawford has found a new home to chuck up shots in Phoenix. I'm assuming that he and Devin Booker's usage rate will be 50% each. So that's 100%. Just both of them chucking shots nonstop on games that nobody's going to watch. Jamal Crawford in Phoenix. Do you like it?
Sure, why not? A team that doesn't have much going for it. No realistic expectations of the playoffs. You kind of wonder what Devin Booker will be able to do as in the lead role this season, and then kind of playing off of Crawford. Should be fun, should be interesting. They should have some nights where they explode for 130 points, even though they'll probably give up 140 something, but you know, whatever. we'll see how it goes. Why not make it interesting? They've got that rookie to try and incorporate too. They're gonna miss out on Luka Doncic, though. They're gonna miss not having him in the lineup. I can tell you that much.
Doncic would have been a nice fit next to Devin Booker.
Yes,
they wouldn't have had to have. They've got to stagger those minutes, Booker and Crawford. I don't see how that works. I don't love it. Before we wrap up, we just want to send our condolences to the friends, family, and fans of Paul Allen, the Portland Trail Blazers and Seattle Seahawks owner who passed away on Monday. Allen owned the Blazers since 1988. He was 65 years old. That's all we have for today. You can subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We'll be back here next Tuesday. You can find us on Locked On Heat. In the meantime, thanks for listening and thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.